It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and this is Maine Things Considered. Ahead on the program tonight, are Maine's continuing high energy prices the fault of the legislature? That's the message today from Governor Paula Page. And controversy in Portland over views and growth. We'll have those stories in your Maine newscast just ahead, but first, national and world news from NPR. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. Fairpoint Communications is getting nearly $80 million over 6 years to help provide broadband internet service to more Mainers. The money's coming from the federal Connect America Fund, a federal communications commission program to expand broadband service in underserved areas. The company says by accepting the money, Fairpoint's committing to provide broadband service with download speeds of at least 10 megabits and upload speeds of at least 1 megabit to more than 35,000 underserved locations in the state. Michael Reed is Fairpoint's president in Maine. He says the company hasn't figured out yet which areas will be the first to see improvements.
We've done a high-level evaluation that played into our ability to make this decision, but now we have to get down to the finite. Where do we build? Where do we run fiber optic cable? Where do we put new electronics? There's a great deal of effort that goes into that, so we have not defined any areas yet.
Reed says not only is the program targeting areas without broadband availability, but also places mostly in rural areas that have very low internet speeds. Three juveniles have been charged, and several more will face charges in connection with a series of burglaries earlier this summer in the Penobscot County town of Milford, which is across the Penobscot River from Old Town. Penobscot County Chief Deputy William Sheehan says on July 16th his office responded to 23 motor vehicle burglary complaints in Milford. He says a few weeks later, state police responded to burglaries at two Milford businesses.
Working with the Maine State Police, we were able to tie in all these different types of burglaries, and it led to one group of people.
Sheehan says all the suspects are from Milford and surrounding towns. And members of the public may soon be able to get their hands on a piece of the century-old green copper removed from the dome of the Maine State House. When the state replaced the weathered copper as part of a $1.3 million restoration project last year, lawmakers approved a plan to use the old copper to make souvenirs, create a public art piece on the Capitol grounds, and sell some to jewelers and the public. The Kennebec Journal reports the Legislative Council is expected to release a notice about the availability of the copper next month. Checking in on the weather this evening, partly cloudy with some fog and mist, very muggy with lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny and very humid, with highs in the low 70s along the coast to the mid-80s inland. This is MPBN Radio. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. In his weekly radio address, Governor Paula Page has returned to a theme he's been visiting for the last 5 years. He says Maine's energy costs are too high and that the Maine legislature is blocking his efforts to lower them. Mal Leary has details.
There's little dispute over the fact that Maine's electricity costs are among the highest in the nation and that consumers bear the brunt. Governor Paula Page has proposed a number of changes in state policy that he says would address the cost issue, and in his weekly radio address, he again criticized the legislature for not doing its part.
40 years of liberal policies in Maine are preventing us from taking advantage of low-cost energy, such as clean and affordable hydropower in Quebec and natural gas from Pennsylvania.
The administration's energy office director, Patrick Woodcock, says those policies over the years have discouraged the development of cheap renewable hydropower, such as the proposed Dickey Lincoln Dam in Aroostook County, and a major hydro project proposed at the Big Amberjack Mockamus Falls on the west branch of the Penobscot River. He says the definitions of renewable in current energy laws defy logic.
What is renewable? Under the legislature's wisdom, 100 megawatts of capacity and below is renewable for hydroelectricity. But if it's 101 and above, it's not renewable.
Woodcock says the definition is aimed at promoting wind power and preventing the import of relatively cheap hydropower from the huge dams operated by Hydro-Quebec to meet the minimum requirement of renewable energy sources in state law. He says simply changing that definition would open the possibility of in-state facilities and open the doors to imported power from Canada. But some in Augusta question that strategy.
Paula Page with his aggressive style, has not been able to score in that field. I don't know whether it's even reasonable.
SACO Representative Barry Hobbins has co-chaired the legislature's Utilities, Energy, and Technology Committee and was an architect of the omnibus energy law that governs state policy. He says there are no guarantees that Maine would save money on imported power from Hydro-Quebec.
State of Vermont are paying market rate. They're paying more than power cost in the state of Maine to have power come from Hydro-Quebec.
Hobbins says it's time for members of both parties in the legislature, the governor, and environmentalists to step back from the political battles and work on real solutions to lower energy costs. He says the governor's study of underutilized hydro dams, released last year, could be one place to start.
There are facilities that could be retrofitted with modern equipment, but those that should be looked at too. That should all be part of the mix.
Energy Office Director Patrick Woodcock agrees and says he and Governor LePage are willing to consider any and all options for addressing Maine's energy needs and costs. He says hydro is being overlooked.
The report showed that there's modest gains that we can have from that. I'll take modest gains. You know, we need to do a whole host of things.
The governor, in his radio address, pointed to a SACO company, a division of Midwest-based Franklin Fueling Systems, that is closing its manufacturing unit in Maine and shifting 35 jobs to Wisconsin, principally because of lower electricity costs in that state. At the request of MPBN News, the governor released dozens of letters he has received from companies contacted by his administration concerning energy costs. The businesses are from all over the state and range from small mom-and-pop operations to the huge Irving Corporation to Shipyard Brewing, all asking for policy changes aimed at reducing power costs. Hobbins says the letters should serve as an incentive for all interests to start working together. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
A group of Portland residents launched a new campaign today to oppose what they are saying is a destructive referendum that would block development in the city. Question two on this November city ballot is a proposal to amend the current land use ordinance, something proponents say is needed to protect some of Portland's most distinctive scenic viewpoints from runaway development. Tom Porter has more.
A new political action committee called Portland's Future held its official launch in the city's Bayside neighborhood, scene of a number of residential and business development projects, some complete, some still on the drawing board. It's this kind of economic growth that could be threatened by the passage of Question 2, says architect Paul Stevens.
I have lived in Portland for over 50 years and have never seen proposed planning legislation that will be as damaging to the community as this.
Stevens, a board member of the Portland Society for Architecture, says Question 2 sets a dangerous precedent by allowing a small group of disaffected residents to co-opt the planning process and halt what he calls quality development. He also criticized the referendum's plan to reform the rezoning process, requiring property developers to make their plans public before City Hall can grant a rezoning request.
This is a really poor idea because few developers will spend the resources to design a project prior to knowing if they will be able to get the property rezoned.
The impetus for Question 2 sprang from community opposition to the planned development at 58 4th Street, a 10-acre industrial site on Portland's waterfront that a real estate group wants to develop for mixed use. Jess Knox is co-chair of Portland's Future, which he says expects to get support and financial help from the 4th Street developers. But he says it's not just about supporting that project.
It's about the discussion that we're having in the city about how we welcome people who want to be engaged and who want to love this city.
Knox warns that Question 2 could challenge even the smallest projects, such as the addition of a flagpole or a new porch on somebody's house.
This referendum could be used as a tool by anyone who opposes almost any change in this city. The exact opposite of creating an atmosphere of openness and welcomeness to new ideas and new people here in Portland.
I think they're using fear and they're trying to get people to vote their way because they do want to build above 4th Street.
Portland resident and former state senator Ayn Rand is with a group called Soul of Portland, which was instrumental in drawing up the Question 2 referendum proposal.
I would really love my grandchildren to be able to walk up and down 4th Street and see the same view that I saw when I was a kid and my father was fishing out of Portland Harbor.
The members of Portland's Future, she says, are mistaken in claiming that Question 2 will enable individuals to obstruct development projects, big or small, because they ruin a private view. Rand says the measure proposes the setting up of a scenic viewpoint task force, which would have 3 years to recommend a handful of public views along Portland's waterfront, requiring extra safeguards against development.
Then they bring their recommendations to the city council, and the city council has final say. Individuals have absolutely no way under our ordinance to block anything.
Rand says Question 2 was drawn up out of concern that Portland's councillors give developers too much of a free hand without listening to the concerns of citizens. Councillor John Hink rejects that characterization. The 4th Street project, he says, was, quote, thoroughly reviewed under existing rules and procedures on the books in Portland, end quote. He goes on to say that Portland must be open to change and reject putting up needless roadblocks to everything new and ambitious. And if people are still concerned about the process, he says, they should support different candidates for public office. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And finally today, NASA may have stopped running space shuttles, but that doesn't mean it's not busy out there. There are 6 astronauts at the International Space Station, and in the world of unmanned exploration, the Curiosity rover has been sending back pictures back from Mars for 3 years. So who will these intrepid space explorers be who explore space in the future? Well, at least one might be from the northern tip of Maine. Jessica Meir grew up in Caribou, and she knew she wanted to be an astronaut from a very young age. Just last month, Meir completed a rigorous and diverse 2-year astronaut candidate program. She told me it included everything from learning to fly jets and practice spacewalks in a buoyancy pool to learning Russian. Her training even brought her to familiar territory.
We actually did some training in Maine as well. We did our land survival training in Maine, and that was a very cool experience. So learning sort of outdoor survival techniques and camping in the Maine woods. So that was a familiar sight for me and nice to be back home in Maine. We learned how to use the robotic arm. So the Canadian Space Agency built a robotic arm on the space station that we use to move things around to assist us in EVAs, and was a very crucial component in building the space station, moving modules around and reconfiguring the space station too. So we learned how to operate that. Astronauts on board the space station will actually operate the arm using some hand controllers, sort of like joysticks that you would use to play video games, and we had to demonstrate proficiency in all of these different things to a certain level in order to graduate. And so I'm really happy to say that all of my 7 classmates and I did reach those goals, and we had our official graduation in July. So now they're no longer calling us astronaut candidates, they're calling us official astronauts now. So now we will wait our turn and hopefully get assigned a mission to the space station in the upcoming years.
You could be one of the first people to travel to Mars. Tell me what that means and also how you prepare for it.
Yeah, so the Mars missions are a little bit further off probably than my immediate career here. So what I'm really focusing on now is hopefully getting to space and getting to the International Space Station. And, you know, Mars has always captivated the human imagination for so long, for decades and much longer than that even. And of course, it's really where our forward vision lies. And we've been very successful at NASA with a series of robotic missions and rovers that I'm sure you've seen pictures of and read about it. And so hopefully what we're doing right now, things that we're doing on the International Space Station will be preparing us for one day going back to the moon or eventually making it to Mars. And of course that would be an extremely exciting mission for anyone that's involved with it.
So this is your job now. Tell me what your days are like now that you're an astronaut.
Yeah, it is my full-time job. So when you're selected to be an astronaut, if you're a civilian like I was, you become a civil servant. So I work for the federal government. Some of my classmates are in the military, and so they actually, it's a little bit different for them. They retain their military branch. So whether it's the Army, the Navy, Air Force, or Marines, they're still employed by that branch, and they're sort of on loan to NASA. So a little bit different situation. But I'm a civil servant, and every day is a little bit different. That's what really keeps our job exciting. So some days I might be For example, on Monday, I had a run in the neutral buoyancy lab in the big pool in the spacesuit. So I was in the spacesuit all day conducting a spacewalk and changing out some hardware that needed to be fixed. Then another day, I might be out flying the T-38, using that for our spaceflight operational training. Another day, I might be in a classroom learning about an electrical system. Right now, since I'm finished with the initial training period, I've been assigned to the CAPCOM branch. And the CAPCOM is the capsule communicator, so that's the person in the mission control room who's actually speaking to the astronauts that are in space. And pretty soon I'll be all checked out and I'll be the one sitting in there talking to the astronauts that are up there on the space station right now. So I'm really looking forward to doing that as well.
Jessica Meir is an astronaut from Caribou, Maine. Thank you so much, Jessica.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you.
And you can find a longer version of this interview at news.mpbn.net. Now at 12 minutes before 6 o'clock, it's time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
This is as thick and rich as it gets in Maine, unadulterated tropical humidity, which will promote the invasion of dense fog tonight for southern and central counties. Northern and western Maine, partly cloudy with lowland fog late. And there may be some spotty mist along the coast, 60 statewide. Tomorrow becoming mostly sunny over western and northern Maine. However, the low clouds and dense morning fog will be slow to vaporize, last to thin out down east, perhaps not until early to mid-afternoon. Then mostly sunny and oppressively humid, 70s coast to mid-80s well inland. We will enter a soggy, muggy siege Friday, and it may persist right through Sunday. I know it's not what we want during the final days of August. Murky with showers expanding, some of which could be torrential. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Barbara Caridi, and Susan Sharon. I'm Nora Flaherty.